Okay, so are we on? We're recording this whole mess, right?
Catherine, we're always on.
Okay.
The life of a podcaster is never dull. Oh. Well, no, I'm sorry. It's always dull. It's just never off.
It's always dull. I mean, it's getting duller. I had a container because we had the house rewired. Because we had aluminum wiring in this old build.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah. And so that was a nightmare. Yeah, I moved back in to help my folks, plugged in my electric toothbrush and heard a zip in the wall. And then everything was hot. And I'm like, I better call someone. Breaker box went off and it was frightening. It was really creepy. And then neighbor after neighbor would come and be like, oh my God, yeah, we had this part of the house rewired. We had that part of the house. And then one of the houses on the corner caught on fire. And then everyone's like, what's the number of your electrician?
Well, I think I would have suggested, why are you looking at your phone?
Because I was just trying to read the article. Go ahead.
Didn't we already read the article, Catherine?
I did. I read it, but I thought I wanted to make sure I didn't forget any pertinent points. I don't think there's much.
No, I mean, the basic gist of it is the pertinent point and that people are buying online.
Right.
But I would have suggested with your house.
Right.
Just let it burn down and rebuild, you know, build over.
Oh, no. That would
be
too
painful. Then you could have lived in a dumpster in front of the house while they rebuilt the house.
Oh, God. No, it was such a nightmare. Yeah, that's a whole nother. I could talk about that for hours and days.
That sounds like it'd be really fun. Let's talk about the art.
Okay. Yeah, okay. So, good article.
Mildly interesting article.
Yeah, mildly interesting.
Artsy Insider, How the Next Generation of Collectors is Buying Art.
Right.
How are they buying art, Catherine?
Online.
Well, they're finding the art online. And I think this is mostly, they didn't, as you mentioned earlier, before we started recording.
Right.
This isn't, I think most of this is not NFTs.
I don't think it is. I kept looking for it. That's why I was kind of perusing again. But
I guess I guess that's an open question then. What are they buying? But I assume they were talking about, quote, hard art, you know, something you can actually hold in your hand.
Right, right.
Though, is invisible art hard art?
Sometimes it's hard to understand.
Could we sell invisible art online?
Sure. I think you could probably sell anything online if someone was willing to pay money for it.
Well, that's the trick, isn't it?
Yeah. I've never mastered
con someone
that trick.
Con someone into, well, you know, that's not the whole deal. Conning someone into buying your work.
Right. Right. No, I thought this, what?
No, really, this is worth $100. Look at me, $100. No, really, this is worth $10,000.
Uh-huh. Right. Yeah, they said that their art in this curated collection, every work is under 30K.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to laugh your ear off there, but I thought that was pretty funny. Oh, it's so, you know.
It's so accessible. Right?
Exactly.
It's so accessible. It's almost like how much you'd pay for a car when you really need a car.
Well, it depends on if you're buying a used car or new, but yeah, $30,000 would be. I could buy any car I wanted for $30,000.
Okay.
I know most people can't do that because they're a little more persnickety about their vehicles than I am. I just want a Prius. God damn it.
I would get a Prius, but it's too small for my needs.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
What are your needs exactly?
Well, two people I haul around and groceries and stuff. And I like to be higher.
I think you could put that into a Prius.
I like to be higher on the road.
You like to be high. Okay,
no, I don't like to be high. Thing. No, that's not. We're not going. No,
why
no,
do you
no.
want to be higher, Catherine? You know that just raises your center of gravity and makes your car less stable.
Right, but I like just kind of looking. I mean, I drove a Mustang for years. I felt like Fred Flintstone, like, you know, when they stick their foot out.
A Prius is not a Mustang.
Okay. No, it's not. No, it's not. I love
especially
my
not
Mustang.
The new Mustang. Have you seen the new Mustangs?
Yeah, I like mine.
Jeez, that is embarrassment.
I like mine. I won't get until they do something better. No,
but they're not going to do better. Ford says they don't make cars anymore.
I know. It's such a shame. I shouldn't have ever gotten rid of that, but it just started disintegrating.
Well, yeah. Welcome to Ford. Anyway, back to the art.
Yeah.
So the idea that people are finding art to buy online, the art market was down overall last year.
Yes, of course.
But the buying online part was up considerably.
Mm-hmm.
So even though their sales are down overall, this means that a lot of art buying has moved online. And of course, it skews the younger generation is finding it online.
Right.
And having been a gallery owner on two different occasions, unsuccessfully, I'm less inclined to try a third time.
Does this appeal to you then? Is that what I'm hearing?
Not really. I have a hard time trying to sell artwork online. I have an online shop, but it seems too detached to me. I think it's really important to be able to see the work in person.
I completely agree. And just it's so flat. And they do have some interesting pieces that they have posted on the website. But trying to...
As part of this? No, most of it was junk.
Well, yeah, it was... Well, I kind of like that little pig one.
Oh, the Hayel Pazanti?
Yes. I like that.
Oh, that's the name of the work. The artist was Jessica Silverman.
Right.
I thought that was visceral, and this is the kind of thing I'd really want to see in person.
Right.
Very. I don't know if it's Crayola crayon or oil paint. And that's only $3,500. So,
right.
Wow,
and, yeah, because they don't.
Steal.
It's oil on Arches paper.
Yeah, it's probably oil crayon. Basically Crayola.
It looks like Crayola. Yeah, it looks like the... That's what it looks like to me.
I don't like the painting. I mean, I think the painting technique is good.
Right.
But it looks so simplistic. It almost looks like something a four-year-old could do.
I know. It does. I don't know why. I think I like the colors.
There's the physicality of it, and the colors and the forms are nice.
Right.
But this is like a sketch for something. This isn't a final piece.
Right. That was the one. Well, they only had a couple pieces. And the other one, it was a similar, just kind of very simple. But I agree with you. It's like I'm looking at, I'm like seeing the texture, and I thought, I wonder what would resonate from that or come off the canvas. Because I really think there's an interaction with art when you're viewing it in person, like some energetic field sometimes. Not to sound like a crazy person, but you know, I do believe that that's part of the emotion when you're standing in front of a piece. And
well,
so this just really falls flat. No, I'm sorry. It just really falls flat to me. Not because...
You mean just viewing it online?
Yeah, the process. Yeah, the process. And
it is a little more antiseptic.
Right. It's like you can't really get into it as much. Like you see this... Like I don't really know. I mean, they say, I guess, and you know how big it is. It's just hard to visualize, really. It's almost like it's all in your mind's eye. Like you have to imagine. And then pay $3,500 to decide that, you know...
Yeah.
It does or doesn't fit in your home. That's the first time you'd see it when you unboxed it.
I wonder what the return policy is. I'll bet it's pretty bad.
Well, yeah.
It's probably like Christie's. Like, you buy it, it's yours now.
Exactly. Yeah.
But, and as a former web designer, my big worry here is that you're not really seeing what you're buying because there are several layers of abstraction between you and the actual work. There's the person who took the photograph, who may or may not have any idea how to take a good photograph of a piece of artwork.
Right.
So you're going to get maybe perspective skew or distortion and color shift, obviously.
Right.
And then there's posting it to the website, and then you're viewing, depending upon what screen you view it on, you're getting a second level of abstraction where you're basically going to be losing colors unless you're looking on a very high quality monitor, and 99% of you aren't. You know, I guess that's pretty harsh. If you have a new iPhone or new iPad or a very expensive Mac Pro, you're probably seeing it a pretty good representation, at least from a color standpoint. Can't really talk too much about the contrast, but at least from a color standpoint, you're probably getting a reasonably good idea of what you're seeing. But you don't really know until you pull it out of the box.
Right.
And that seems like kind of a gamble.
I know we, you know, closed up in June or July of 2020. Do you see this as being the new forefront for art purchasing, viewing?
It's not up to me. I mean, it seems like that's where all the kids are buying their artwork, and they don't say it explicitly. And I think Artsy is trying to guide you to their own system, but I think most people, when they're buying artworks online, I think they're doing it through Instagram, because that's where you can see all the artwork, and you can buy it through Instagram, and
right?
You can see related stuff, and you can, you know, it's just a, I think it's a more visceral marketplace for art.
Okay.
As far as, like, you know, visceral being online, an online visceral art market.
Right. It's just that arm's length removed from the actual piece.
You can get into the whole social media frenzy, and that would encourage you to buy even more.
Right. It kind of reminded me, like, when we were talking to Ken Clark, like, several podcasts ago, and he talked about Festivus 2020 and how it had to be online. Mm-hmm. And I asked him in the podcast, I'm like, how did that go? And he's like, well, as good as you can expect it would. And I do know several of the artists who were involved with that. And it wasn't completely abysmal, but it was certainly not Festivus, as we all know and love. I mean, there's just, you know, their sales were down. It just really wasn't the way to go. And they did a lot of creative things. Like, they highlighted people. You know, the marketplace, is it where? I can't remember what they called it. It was open. And they had highlighted different aspects of, like, craft or art on their sites and had special days for that. But I just think it really is an interactive thing.
And the problem is, that if you're just doing it online, you're competing against so much other stuff that you can get online, like Netflix. I mean, how are you going to compete against Netflix when you're just walking around? You're trying to create an online interactive arts space.
Right.
Isn't it easier just to go and watch a TV show on Netflix? Because that content is a lot better curated and actually meant to be viewed in that context.
Right. Well, I think this to me seems like it was just born out of the pandemic, as so many things were. And as galleries closed or people weren't gathering and no one was going into places, it was just an answer to that moment.
Well, I think like with so many things, it didn't create this online marketplace, but it accelerated it.
Exactly. Yeah, I think the pandemic accelerated a lot of online or arm's length detachment kind of living. It certainly has for me. And I think back, it's kind of like that before and after. It's astonishing in some ways, and in some ways, it's just a day in the life now.
Cool. One of the things the article doesn't talk about is the where they're buying. They're just saying they're buying online, but they're not actually calling out specific markets, which I think is another reason why I'm assuming that it's Facebook or Instagram, because I don't think they want you to know that, because that would push you away from their marketplace.
Right.
And they also don't talk about what the sales are, what prices things are going for. You know, are people buying $100 paintings or $3,000 paintings online? So those are some pretty big important numbers that they don't cover in the story. And I would guess, this is just a guess, just a sheer guess, that it's probably less expensive artwork that's selling online. Instagram, I see, you know, there's some great artists on Instagram that do sell their paintings for a few $1,000s each.
Okay.
But there are a lot of artists on Instagram that are they're only selling it for a few $100s.
Right. Which is what I would expect. And I thought, well, the article was very sparse. It was just like a toe in the water kind of article. There was all of that wasn't covered. And I want, you know, they have this curated situation, but like, where are they putting out a call to artists? That was one question I had when I read it. I mean, how are people connecting? Do they submit their work? Are they juried in some way? Like, who's curating these pieces?
Well, that's the thing. If it's Facebook and Instagram, the person browsing their social media is the person who's curating it. They're curating themselves.
But I thought this artsy. I thought it's not a separate website.
Oh. I don't know how their platform works, so you can probably submit it. I don't know if they accept or not, but I'm on pixels.com, and pixels.com, anybody can set up an account there.
Okay.
And sell their work there.
Okay.
There's Saatchi.com, which is not associated with the Saatchi brothers anymore.
Okay.
That's actually quite a bone of contention there, but Saatchi.com, I think anyone can get on there as well, but that's, you know, considered to be a big value name.
Right.
And again, it's not the Saatchi Gallery anymore, associated with the London Saatchis, the Saatchis of London.
Okay.
But it's still, I think, got its own brand strength, for better or worse.
Okay. Yeah, because they just made such a point of the curation of it. Is that even a word?
Curation, yeah.
Yeah, so the curation of it. But it's like, are they putting out a call to art? And I didn't do any deep dive because... I just didn't.
Well, I don't think we need to. I just want to get a reaction from you about what your thoughts about it was. And ironically, even though I'm a little bit opposed to it, my work is really well suited to it. And I'm thinking about diving more deeply into it because I make the work on my iPad. And I can show it on people. If people see my work on an Apple device with a really great display or a Samsung phone or something that has a really good display. That's really the key thing here. But Apple is better because they usually generally have more neutral colors. The Samsung has great displays, but they usually oversaturate their displays.
Oh, okay.
But if you're seeing digital art that was created on, you know, digitally, you're going to get a much better feeling of what the actual final work looks like.
Right. So they're actually going to see your art as opposed to... some, like you said, an abstractive vision of it.
You know, this is the medium. You're seeing it basically on the medium.
In the
that
medium,
was created.
Correct. Right. Right. No, I think it's an interesting concept. Go ahead.
The other interesting part is I do follow some creators on TikTok and Instagram. And for them, or for the younger ones anyway, I picked up this stuff from the younger kids, the younger, you know, 20-year-olds or something.
Right.
Kids. They focus also on the delivery experience. So it's not just you get a box in the mail with a painting in it, you get a carefully assembled box, which has the work that you bought. And then it also has some other materials. Like it has maybe a certificate saying, you know, this is the, it's one, they'll like do an edition, like the 2021 edition. So they'll have a range of maybe 12 paintings they're selling that year. And then mm-hmm. so you get a box filled with that, a little bit of information, maybe some stickers, maybe some other pins and whatnot. Pins are a big thing mm-hmm. these days.
Really?
So it's an experience. When you get it, you open the box and it's a plethora of things inside there that you can kind of experience. So there's an unboxing, I guess, which is kind of a weird thing to think about. But this is merchandising your artwork in 2021.
The unboxing thing, I came upon some unboxing video one time for these dolls. They're like the reborn dolls. They look like babies. And I thought they were absolutely frightening, particularly since I worked as a neonatal ICU nurse. They look like sick preemies. I thought it horrifying. And I watched one. It was so nauseating. But they did the same thing. Like the doll was at the very bottom of the box. And they had this unboxing video on YouTube. And they pulled out like all these baby clothes and this little poem and, you know, all this stuff, like little bottles and weird. It was absolutely crazy. And then they finally get to the little baby and then they unwrap. And so I think that's that whole unboxing moment has been around. So it's interesting now that they're applying it to artwork. I don't know. I've not ever sold anything online, even though I had the Etsy account and then I closed it. But I liked doing it in person. I don't know that I would go through all that nonsense as a creator, as a seller. I mean, I might now if that was what was expected.
It's not just that it's expected, but you do have to consider how you're going to deliver the work. And once you start getting into that area, you've got to figure out how you want it to be received. And once you're going down that road, it's not that far. I don't think it's that much of a stretch to start including some other materials in there to make the unboxing more interesting, which will encourage your purchaser to maybe share and like your stuff more and create another sale.
Do you think it's just strictly marketing, or is it just a way, and such, again, I've said arm's length like a million times in this podcast so far, but we're so detached, you know, is that just another way to form a connection with the receiver?
I think it's all of it.
Okay.
I think it comes from a marketing place, but I think some of these creators, these young creators, they're so full of optimism. Mm-hmm. And I think part of it, the sense I get from them, this may just be their marketing skills. It's they're just trying to share their stuff and they're excited about selling their work and they like having this performance when you open it up.
Right. I think it's very sweet. I think it's a sweet.
Well, it can be. Like I said, I'm sure some of them are very mercenary about it, but some of the ones I've seen seem like they're pretty genuinely excited about creating this experience for people.
Tell me why buttons are a big thing.
Do I look like I know? I'm 30 years too old to understand why buttons are such a big thing.
Oh, I didn't know they were a big thing.
I mean, they're almost like jewelry. I guess they are jewelry in a sense.
Wow.
So there's that. And you like jewelry? Beads. You could fill it with beads.
Fill it with beads. No. No. So that was an interesting article. I'm sorry.
Well, wasn't that interesting?
No, actually, it was. It was more than it was. You know, it was just a short little blurb that you sent me. But it kind of, like we've talked about, like expanded its boundaries. But I think it...
Well, it's a topic that's of interest.
I think it is a topic of interest. And you mentioned before we started recording, like, are there NFTs buried in there somewhere? And I didn't get any sense that that was the case. What was your sense?
I didn't think of that either when I was reading the article, but I think that's another point that they probably intentionally avoided because NFTs are pretty hot, and especially the non-fungible tokens, artwork being sold as cryptically locked online tokens. I know none of that made any sense, and guess what? It doesn't really make sense.
It doesn't really make sense. You know, because part of purchasing something, particularly if you're paying like upwards of $30,000 for it, to me would be viewing it and looking at it. And how do you view a token?
Yeah, but collecting is a different kind of thing. You know, if you're just a collector and you're trying to collect things, that's a different motivation.
Oh yeah, I guess it is. You're right.
And let's be honest. I mean, the high end art world is completely mad and crazy and filled with people who don't know what they're doing and too much money to throw around. So it's more about that gratification of buying something unique, perhaps, you know, the dopamine hit of back buying something and being able to say, oh, I spent $15,000 on some gif of a kitty cat.
A gif of a kitty cat. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it's just that chasing the dragon, I guess. Like you're right, the dopamine hit.
And people with more money than sense.
Yeah. I have neither. It just doesn't appeal to me. I would want to see something, hang it on my wall and enjoy it. James, let's circle back a little bit to last week, and I mentioned that I think it even ended up in the show notes as some recycled art just looks like garbage. Yeah. And I hadn't pulled up the article, but I did forward you an article about these 13 incredible artivists, they call them, artivists.
Oh, was that what that was? Yeah. I still don't understand how they're applying that or why they're applying that word. I mean,
because
are they artists,
I guess they're
artivists? I don't know.
Well, they're activists and artists because they're using recycled materials in their art. And so, in their art, cause artist.
All right.
So it was.
Hang on a second, Catherine. You walk up to any artist, any given artist, and I think 80% of them are going to say, oh, yes, I'm an activist through my art. Which is probably 50% of the time is probably bullshit. And I certainly wouldn't say I'm an activist through my quote art because I don't make art. I just paint. But
right.
Yeah. So that's kind of a stupid name. That's go away. Just put that away.
Well, but this was in causeartist.com. So I just, you know, I find these articles that are kind of out there and I just, it appealed to me. I'm like, okay, let's see what they're bringing. And they talk about Phoenix out of the trashes, raising awareness because of the pollution crisis and consumerism culture and making a positive social eco impact. But this is one of the articles that I said, some art that's made from recycled materials just looks like garbage. Now I'm not saying this is garbage. I mean, I don't want to denigrate the artist in that sense, but I'm not sure what it is.
That's a whole range of people making art using reclaimed materials.
Right.
And for different reasons. And some of it's good and some of it's bad, as any field that you look into.
Right.
This article was just kind of bland. I didn't really think we got a lot from it. I would say the strongest response I got was from the woman who was hanging garbage from the ceiling and creating what was supposed to be a fun, immersive experience showing all the plastic pollution of the oceans.
Yes.
And the reason I had such a visceral negative response to it was because you actually look at the picture and it looks kind of beautiful. It's just a nice environment of hanging colors and translucency. And I'm thinking, if she's trying to actually represent trash and how it's littering the ocean, this is not it. This is like a playful experience of trash. This is
I'm looking at
like
it
a
right
fantasy.
Now. Right. Yeah, it's called the piece is called Under the Water, Over the Sea, and I think it's absolutely beautiful. And I wanted to go in there. I wanted to go in and stand where she's standing. There's someone standing in the piece.
It's a Disneyfication of Disneyfication. I don't know how to say that
Disney.
Word that I just made up. It's a Disney version of pollution. It's like, yeah, I want that. So I think the point that she was trying to make is completely fails.
Right, because it's so gorgeous. I mean, it really is beautiful.
Well, I don't know if I'd go so far as it's interesting. It looks like I would send my kids in there. I think they'd have a fun time just bouncing around, you know, knocking things around and seeing how they interplay with each other. And
right. When I look at that, I have the feeling of like almost like a cartoon or some, you know, like in a movie, like say if something was exploded and then it just stopped. Mm-hmm. That's what it feels like to me.
Yeah, but animated so that it's actually every piece is considered. It looks like, you know, she assembled it to make it look beautiful.
Yes, she did.
I mean, it was very clearly assembled and very carefully assembled. It's not like it's not like a trash heap. I mean, that's a completely different thing.
No, it's so clearly not a trash heap. So anyway, so I just sent that because I'm, you know, I've been collecting now a lot of different packaging. It's like after we had that discussion last week about the Lay's potato chip bags.
Oh, yeah. This is just about your packaging fetish now.
Yeah, my packaging fetish. I bought some organic sweet potatoes yesterday at Costco, and the bag they came in was like kind of plastic and it's mesh. You know, it's like a mesh bag. Mm-hmm. And so I took them out and I washed it off and I just was looking at it. I'm like, gosh, that's going to go somewhere and never disintegrate. What could I do with it?
Well, it will eventually, everything eventually disintegrates.
Right, eventually. But I'm thinking, so I'm playing around with this. I'm playing around with this idea of the metallized foil, you know, the foil metallized plasticky.
Yeah, papers. and this is a medium. It's not so much an activist platform.
No.
It's just a medium depending on, you know, what you use. If you use recycled steel, that was kind of cute too, I thought. Mm-hmm. With a sculptor who was, you know, taking blocks of steel from engine blocks or mm-hmm. old machinery. You don't have to do that. Steel is one of the most recyclable things in the entire universe.
Right.
Maybe hydrogen, but you can't really make art out of hydrogen.
No.
It's kind of silly just to think of you're doing something good for the environment just because you're making steel sculptures out of old discarded steel parts. Because again, you just dump that in a foundry and make more steel stuff.
Right. It's and eventually someone will find your piece for melt value.
And one of the things, well, not for steel, because it costs more to haul it off than it does.
Right.
To,
well, of course, I'm just saying that.
And what I guess the disappointing thing about the article is that they picked an artist, or let's say a sculptor, not the finest example in this area. I have been for two decades at least. I've been looking at people doing this kind of thing. That, you know, they'll take an old car or motorcycle and they'll pull some metal parts out of it, and then they'll very elegantly craft something new out of it.
Right.
And this is, you know, I mean, yeah, it's okay, but it's not, this is by no means the best example of it.
Right. Now,
so if you can write the article like this, find better examples.
Yeah, I just, you know, it just spurred me on to do some other things. And then I started thinking about ways that I've done that without saying I've done that. I happened when I was taking a metalwork class years and years ago, maybe not that many years ago, several years ago, over at Phoenix Center for the Arts. And I found copper pipe that had been in my yard for maybe 40 years. So I took it and I cut it and I just hammered it. And I made a little series of bracelets, like cuff bracelets from them. Mm-hmm. Very crude. And I just was experimenting. You know, but you could make stuff out of anything. I gave one to a friend. She's like, I love it. And they actually were kind of cute.
Copper's even easier than copper, steel. So, that's so super recyclable.
Yeah, so super recyclable. But it was just, I didn't want to waste money on silver while I was learning how to manipulate metal. And then I bought some metal slab. You know, you can buy it in like slabs at these different stores, whatever.
Right.
And then I just saw these pipes. I'm like, I wonder if I could do something like that. And it actually was kind of cool.
When I was learning silversmithing or jewelry making, I used to be able to go to the bank and just buy Canadian coins. They were 99% pure silver. Mm. And that was the cheapest way to get silver back then.
Oh, wow.
And it was funny because it was just at the time, just on the cusp of when banks stopped selling ingots. Because I used to be able to also go to the bank and just buy like a 1 ounce silver ingot.
Oh, wow.
Can't do that anymore.
No.
I think, I don't know. As an American, I don't think we're allowed to actually own precious metals for that. Like actually hold it in our, you know, go and buy it like that. There's some weird laws around that.
Oh, now. I don't know about that.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. One point on that, the guy making sculpture out of reclaimed steel, he's like, he's taking heavy metals out of the environment. It's like, well, you know, steel isn't really that reactive. There's nothing bad about steel. It's just iron. Iron is a natural element, and it doesn't really, it's not bad for you. It's like, so funny, it reminds me, TikTok is, there are so many bad elements of TikTok, but there's a bunch of stupid, stupid TikTokers who are talking about nutrition. And one guy went off on how terrible baby food is because it's just filled with heavy metals.
Oh, they did find some heavy metals in baby food, though.
Yes, iron.
Right.
They're fortified with iron because so babies' brains can grow, because babies' brains need iron to grow.
Oh, is that all it was? There wasn't arsenic or anything?
Now, well, there are some problems from Chinese baby food areas. But generally speaking, you pick up any kind of baby food you pick up is going to be very heavy in iron because that's what the babies need.
Yes, they do need iron.
But
they do.
Wah-wah wackos on TikTok just take everything and don't understand what they're even talking about. So we need to recycle them. I wonder, can I make artwork out of recycled people?
Oh, no.
Oh, come on.
No, that's just too...
take the fun out of everything,
no,
Catherine.
No, that's just way too like World War II stuff. No.
Oh, no. What? No. Not Jewish people. Obviously not Jewish people.
No, just people, just in general. Like, yeah. Soylent Green is people.
Just the bad TikTokers.
No. Disabuse yourself of that notion right now, James. Not happening.
Oh, fine.
Not happening. I entertain a lot of your nonsense, but that's over the... Nah, we're done. No, we're
Can I
done.
Borrow one of your fingers? I just want to give it a little try. Just
no,
the pinky.
Here, this one.
We'll start
one?
With the pinky.
This one?
Yeah, that one will be fine.
Okay.
Let me see what I can do with that.
Okay.
And yeah, the other piece in that article, the other piece in that article that caught my eye a little bit was there's a horse made out of old toys.
Old plastic toys.
And the only thing that spurred in me is, and this may entirely be inside of me and because of my weirdness, but when I see a little plastic part, a little discarded plastic part, especially if it's just a part of something bigger, like the fascia, the faceplate from an old printer or something.
Right.
I have a weird connection to that. And I would look at it And I say, who are you? What are you from? How did you get here? I don't know why. I just want to know that story. Because it's almost like a nostalgic thing. It's like, I don't know where you came from, but I know that you have a past. I know you were created in a specific time.
And
you have a specific story about how you got here. So tell me that. And I can never know that story, right? Because you can't trace it back to a piece of plastic like that.
No.
And I wonder if that's just me or why it's for mass. I feel that connection with mass produced plastic pieces or mass produced pieces in general, but plastic because there's so much more of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. The only thing I come up with, maybe because they all seem to have like this time imprint on them. It's like if you find a computer that was made in 1998 and you look at it, you can say, oh my gosh, this is how computers used to look. You can immediately recognize that this is an old computer from a different time.
Uh-huh.
It's like excavating an Etruscan tomb or something.
Right. That's what you got from that horse?
Yes.
So it moved you. Weird? That was art.
Well, I don't know if that moved me. It made me wonder about the pieces themselves, not the horse itself. I'm not saying the horse is bad. The horse was fine.
The horse was cute.
Yeah, it was fine. Yeah. I just wonder, why do I have this reaction to mass-produced things? It's because someone really spent a lot of time mass producing this thing, and now it's completely garbage. It's completely discarded.
Well, I think that's the point of a lot of these pieces about that consumerism. And then I think,
just for me, it goes past consumerism, though. It's just this thing. I'm a thing person. When I want to understand a culture, I look at the things that they made.
Right.
Whereas other people will try to understand the people through their dialogue or whatever nonsense people use to communicate. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Nonsensical people.
I think we've grown up with so many things. I mean, even, you know, they put toys in boxes of cereal. They had toys in little happy meals, you know, and what happened to all that stuff? It's in the bottom of some landfill.
Well, some of it is. Others
are collecting
prize
it.
Prize collection. Yeah, it's a prize collection for most people.
Right. So it's either something very held dear or it's just garbage. And there's not much between that continuum.
No, that's interesting. The only thing that's in between that continuum is that stuff that we have now. You know, the thing we just bought last week that we're actually using, that's important to us for now, but it's about to become trash.
Right. Right. I just started looking at trash differently for a long time. You know, and maybe some of it came, you know, my dad probably was a recycler before recycling was recycling. And he would often see things like other purposes. Maybe it was growing up at the cusp of the Depression and, you know, being from a large family, you know, so they have a different way of viewing a lot of things. And so I'm looking right now at a shelving unit that he made. And it was like he used to work for Mountain State, when it was Mountain States and Mountain Bell before all the divestiture and AT&T, and now it's CenturyLink. But this was years and years ago, and they had the old switchboards. Mm-hmm. And they were all wooden switchboards. And all of a sudden, you know, this truck rolls up, and they're unloading all this wood. And my dad's like, it was so beautiful.
Mm.
They were just tearing them down and throwing out this beautiful wood. And he made this shelving unit that takes the entire wall in this garage that I'm in. It's a repurpose room that was a garage out of switchboard wood.
It's always disappointing to see the dumpsters outside of houses when the flippers come in because they tear out so much wonderful stuff.
Yes. Yeah, that happened to my cousin. She had sold the first house she and her husband had purchased in Naperville. And then they upsized. They had the kids and they upsized. And so before they sold the house, she went to great pains and dropped a lot of money and redid it so it would look pretty and prettier and sell better and whatever. And so they closed. She moved into her new house. A couple months go by and she calls me. She's like, Kath, I'm sitting in front of the house and I'm just sick to my stomach. She goes, every single thing that I angsted over and tried to make so perfect is sitting outside the house. They tore out the bathroom. They tore out everything.
That's kind of silly. You shouldn't invest yourself in stuff like that, especially in houses, because, you know, it's not yours anymore.
Right. And I said, what? And, you know, she's like, well, why did they throw away perfectly good things? It was all brand new. It was less than 6 months old. I said, because it was not their aesthetic. I said, lesson learned. Next time you just sell the house as is and let someone take it. I would rather buy a house as is and put my own spin on it. You know,
absolutely.
To me, it was a lesson learned, right?
Yeah, don't fix up a house if you're selling it. Just paint it, you know?
Exactly. Paint it, clean it, detrash it, get the shit out of it, and just let it rip, you know? But
I would rather do what they want to do.
Yeah, and I don't want to buy some some you know, hole to live in, but I would certainly rather put my spin on it. So
but that's also different. It's also different from taking a barn that was maybe built in 1850 and just tearing all the boards out, because those boards are beautiful and you can't get wood like that anymore because
you
don't have old growth forests like that.
You can't. No, you can't. That's
and
why
some people do take the time to reclaim that wood.
Yeah, that's why I ended up with 18 old growth teak wood boxes that are in my shed, because they were just going to throw them out.
Well, I suggest that you fill those, paint them black, and sell them.
Paint them black. I don't want to paint them anything. They've got.
Okay.
I was going to take a picture of them for it. They're really cool. They're like old. I've given a couple away to friends. Just I had so many. I had 18. I think I'm down to like 15 or 14 or something.
Wow, you've got given a lot away.
I've given a lot
away so far. You're really generous there.
Yeah, they have really interesting stamps on them.
Well, you'll have to bring one over so I can take a look at it and see if it's worth anything.
It's way too heavy. You'll have to come here. No, they're huge. They're huge.
That's why you have an SUV, isn't it?
Yeah, but I can't even lift it. It's like it's old growth freaking teak.
Come on. You can
do it. I'm not.
It'd be a good workout for you.
Yeah, well, you can come here and look at it too.
Plus, when you throw out your back, it'll give you something else to do. You can go to the doctor. Okay.
Okay.
I'm going to stop recording now.
Okay, bye.
Bye.